Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I am James Holloway, and for the past 71 episodes, I've been reading my way through the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I did, I talked about the monsters I found in it, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. And now, my work is done. This is episode 72 of Monster Man, and we did it! Last episode, we covered the last monster in the 1977 First Edition Monster Manual, the zombie. But don't you think that that means Monster Man is over? Oh no. The First Edition Monster Manual was the first of its kind, and arguably the greatest of its kind, if only because all other books of monsters are, to some degree, responses to it and commentaries on it. But it's far from the only one, and as we will see, there were other creations of the early 1980s that had a lasting impact on Dungeons & Dragons and had a lasting impact on games in general. But I really do think that the Monster Manual kind of uniquely changed the way that we think about the role that monsters play in games and the role that monsters play in fiction even. And I'll talk about some of those thoughts a little bit later on. You know, I said earlier that this was the 72nd episode of Monster Man, and it is the 72nd regularly numbered episode. But actually, in addition to these 72 episodes, I had a zero episode, I've had 9 monster-specific special episodes, 13 episodes of Patron Deities, 1 zero episode of Patron Deities, 3 Patron Deity specials available to all my patrons, not just those who subscribe at the $2 level or higher, and 2 My Favorite Monster specials. And what that means is that this is the 101st episode that I've recorded for this project, whether that's Monster Man or Patron Deities. 101 episodes. I mean, I know they're not all very long, but still it's a lot. I thought today I would start by talking a little bit about what inspired Monster Man and what I think I've learned from it. Monster Man was started last year. I was actually largely inspired by another podcast that sadly isn't around anymore, in which the host read through every issue of The Amazing Spider-Man. It was just 10 minutes. It came out every day, and it was called The Amazing, Amazing Spider-Man Man. And honestly, I mean, I love The Amazing Spider-Man, and particularly the sort of classic issues of the 60s as much as the next guy, but I really loved that title, The Amazing, Amazing Spider-Man Man. That's the kind of dumb thing that appeals to me. And I had been listening to it and thinking about it, and one morning I basically woke up and said to my wife, I could do a podcast where I read my way through the Monster Manual, and I could call it Monster Man. And that really was just the genesis of the idea. I mean, it's nothing to it, really. Except that I thought, you know, when you look at the Monster Manual, I feel like the perspective from which you approach it really informs what you take away from it. And we tend to think of it now either as, oh, well, it's the Monster Manual. It's a foundational text of Dungeons & Dragons. Or if we look at it from like a modern perspective from, you know, 5th Ed players or whatever, we just think of it as an ancestor of the modern Monster Manual. And of course, those are both true. I mean, it is both those things. But I feel like that's a little bit of a disservice almost, because the Monster Manual is an extremely unusual text. And I think because there have been so many books that were based on it, that were derived from it, that drew on it, we have kind of forgotten how unusual and how influential it has been. It's been effectively so successful that it's just blended into the landscape. I don't think that the Monster Manual originated any of the ideas that occur in it, or at least not most of them. But what it did was make them normal. The way that the Monster Manual thinks about monsters is now the way that most of us within the kind of geek world, most of us who are science fiction and fantasy fans or gamers or comic book fans or whatever, think about monsters. And I don't necessarily think that that was the case before this. I think it drew on a fan love of categorization that you can see in everything that people do, right? You know, when I was a kid, I would obsessively write these, like, lists in my notebook at school. Like, I don't know, the names of all the Space Marine chapters and their Primarchs. Or, there weren't Pokemon in those days. I was a teenager when Pokemon really sort of became popular. But it's the same thing that inspires young kids to want to know what all the Pokemon were. And for me, that was often expressed through my love of comic books. It was this idea that there were all these issues out there, there were all these stories and all these characters, and there was always so much more to find out, so much more to discover, and to classify. We have this great urge to classify, or at least I did. If you look at the weird fiction that in many ways was the ancestor of early Dungeons & Dragons gaming, I don't think there is that urge to classify. Or at least, if there is, it doesn't really happen. You know, we give Lovecraft that treatment, and we give Howard that treatment, and we give Leiber that treatment, and we try to fit everything that they create into these categories, but I don't think that they're really present in the fiction. They've sort of been imposed on that fiction by the needs of a game. And there are authors who have kind of monstrous races and schema for the different species that inhabit their world. Tolkien's an obvious example, and you can kind of see it in Lewis as well, where, you know, we see that there are armies made up of, you know, minotaurs and centaurs and what have you. So I'm sure that this is not an idea that originates with the Monster Manual, but because it was so necessary for playing the game, and because the way the monsters had been presented prior to this was kind of scattered, I think there was very much this idea of like, yeah, we're going to put them all into one place. And you can see, like, there's this constant use of the term. I don't think they use it for Monster Manual, but it's used in Deities and Demigods. They call it a cyclopedia. And I think that idea that this is a, like a textbook, you know, this is, we're going to get them all, we're going to put them in one place, one book, one big hardback. I mean, is this the first hardback gaming book, I think, right? You know, that gives it this sense of authority. And I think that we've thought about monsters in the terms laid down by the Monster Manual ever since. Now, in some ways, that's a bad thing. I mean, I've said before that I think that the turning, you know, the spectrum of folkloric monster into categorized monsters is kind of a mixed blessing. It makes them easier to work with, but definitely something is lost. But on the other hand, we learn to think of these creatures in a different way, as almost pieces in a puzzle that we could take apart and combine. They were all, if you like, translated into the same language. We could all work with them together now. And I think that is the default assumption behind fantasy gaming, right? Every video game that deals with this kind of stuff has in its bones ideas from Dungeons & Dragons, even if the people who made it have never played Dungeons & Dragons. You know, mimics are so much a part of the video game cultural landscape that I think probably a lot of people who think, oh yeah, those are mimics. Mimics are a monster from fairy tales or something. You know, they're just sort of a general feature of the landscape, like goblins. They're not something that came from somewhere. And I think, again, that's down to the way in which the thinking of the Monster Manual affected everything. The other thing that I think the Monster Manual and early D&D in general really reveals is the extent to which the people who created this game were, although they loved fantasy, of course, they were not limited in their sense of what constituted it. And we see things that come from, you know, from science, from history, from prehistory. We see people who love historical adventure stories, right? I mean, these were people who were united by their love of medieval gaming originally. We see things that come from pirate stories and westerns. We see, you know, works that we would typically not think of as fantasy or science fiction, that instead we would put into, like, I don't know, you know, literature, that category, right? Creatures from the classics, people from the creatures from the works of ancient writers, you know, creatures from fairy tales. And I think that to some degree, the genre of fantasy as we know it today, not existing at that time, but actually being, you know, several different things, helped create this thing that is eclectic, but that has since been kind of, you know, refined into a distinctly Dungeons and Dragons-like aesthetic. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, again, but I think if we close ourselves to that eclecticism, we are losing something. In a way, it's a little bit like the tragedy of the owlbear. I've said before that the owlbear as a monster was created based on a cheap plastic toy, and that people who look at the owlbear often don't say, what a wonderful idea, let me create cheap monsters out of cheap plastic toys myself. Instead, they say, what a wonderful idea, how can I iterate on owlbears? One of the things that we're going to see in the Fiend Folio is that to a certain extent, partly because a lot of the territory has been occupied already by the Monster Manual, the Fiend Folio and later books are sort of concerned with iterating on the Monster Manual, rather than opening themselves to a wide variety of different sources in the way that the Monster Manual did. And I do think that the best way to derive inspiration for your games ultimately is not just to read the Monster Manual. It's to do as the people who created the Monster Manual did, to read folklore and to read, you know, medieval bestiaries and ancient naturalists, to read history and geography and mythology and whatever, and to just make stuff up, to doodle, to come up with ideas based on silly things you see or just words that you think are funny, to come up with things based on the needs of your game, to treat all of these things equally and never to assume that just because it's not in a hardback book, it doesn't have the authority of your imagination. And anyway, that's me being sentimental. Of all the things, so two kind of spin-off projects have emerged from Monster Man. The first of these is Patron Deities, my show about religion and mythology in games, which I think is a lot of fun, and I hope that those of you who are subscribers at the $2 level or higher are enjoying it. It's got a pretty small audience, to be perfectly honest, but bigger than I ever expected, so I'm pleased. The second was the Monster Man contest, and the Monster Man contest, probably the most successful thing we've ever done on this show. And I know that there were people who entered, people who voted, probably people who won, who were not and are not listeners of the show, and that's okay. I know the biggest regret that I have is that I promised several episodes back that I was going to do a second Monster Man contest, and then things just got out of hand. I was very busy in my daily life. I even received some entries and then never awarded prizes. I just lost track of time and couldn't keep up with it. However, I propose to remedy that situation. I've said that I'm taking a break until, well, I'm not taking a break from making episodes, but I'm taking a break from making like regularly scheduled episodes, basically to get ahead of my recording schedule and to let some of the like one episode ideas that I've had come out a little bit, because they don't fit in necessarily very well in the regular season structure. So there's going to be an interlude of about 2 weeks, and then at the beginning of June, Monster Man is going to come back with season 2. And when that happens, the second Monster Man contest is going to happen. And that's going to be one without a physical element, so if you don't have access to toys or don't want to make stuff based on toys, etc., etc., this is one that's all theater of the mind. It's all words on paper, or I guess screen. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope that you're looking forward to it too, and I really apologize for the delay with it. We are going to have it when season 2 starts in June. I know that's later than I said, but that's just kind of how it worked out. Speaking of the Monster Man contest means that we get to come to the most important part of this episode, and that is where I thank people. The Monster Man contest is something that I hosted, and I think of my role as being like the MC of that contest, right? Like, I did the announcements, I wrote the updates, and I did some of the publicity, but I didn't create the monsters, I didn't judge them, and I didn't provide the prizes. So I have to thank everyone who participated. So that means the judges. So Jeff Solomon Sims of Oakbound Studio, Guy Fullerton of Chaotic Henchman Productions, and Dirk the Dice from the Grognard Files. If you're interested in the history of gaming and you are not listening to the Grognard Files, you're missing out, especially if you're interested in British games. You really should check it out. Prizes were provided by some of the people I just mentioned, including Oakbound and Chaotic Henchmen, together with Robert Thorkhammer Pinnell at Grant Howitt, and of course, Otherworld Miniatures. It was astonishing to me that my little contest wound up getting support from all these wonderful game makers, and I couldn't be happier that we've been able to, you know, supply fun games to people who want to play them, all because I had a passionately held conviction about toys. In addition to all the people who participated in, voted in, and sponsored the contest, I have to thank my Patreon backers. I mean, the idea that people might give me money in exchange for making this show, and an additional show, is a crazy one. I mean, on the face of it, it's crazy. And yet, there are people who contribute some of their hard-earned money every month to, you know, pay for the expenses to cover the hosting and a few other minor costs of producing Monster Man. And that's crazy. I still can't quite believe that it happens, but I really, really appreciate everyone who subscribes, no matter what level. That's not me trying to get you to subscribe. If you don't feel like it, that's perfectly fine. Monster Man will always be free and ad-free. I might compromise on that last one. If you got ads, talk to me about it, I'll run them. Razors, mattresses, I don't care. I'll do anything. And jumping off from that, the people that I have to thank the most, the person that I have to thank the most is you, the person listening to this. Thank you so much for listening to and continuing to support Monster Man. Now, I have had some people ask me, you know, whether they're Patreon backers or not, other ways they can support the show. Well, the most important thing you can do is just tell people about it. If you're enjoying Monster Man, I would love it if you would recommend it to people who you think might like it. It's kind of a niche subject, I know, but I think it's a lot of fun, and I think there are definitely people out there who would be interested in hearing it who aren't. I really try to make it not just some kind of old school niche thing, for one thing, because I'm not really all that old school, right? I didn't look at this book until I was in my 30s. The other thing is, if you listen to us on a service that has reviews, so, you know, iTunes or Stitcher or whatever it might be, if you could go there and leave us a review, that would be super great. I'm aware that my iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever it's called these days page looks like garbage. I formatted my episode titles badly, and I'm too organized and not organized enough to want to go back and change them. Sorry about that. But anyway, yeah, a review would be stellar. You know, the more reviews we get and the better they are, the more featured we get on these things. I don't think we're ever going to get into, like, the upper reaches of the D&D podcast world, but it'd be kind of cool to get more recommendations. So yeah, if you're enjoying the show, spread the word. That's really the most important thing you can do. Getting a little sentimental here. I'm full of gratitude. I really am, for all the people who have listened to and complimented and encouraged the show, who've supported it either with their time or with their products or with their money. I cannot express how thankful I am to all of you. But the best way for me to express that thanks is to keep making this show. So like I said, I'm going to do a couple of special episodes. Right now, as I'm recording this, I don't know what they're going to be. I just know that I have a big list. I have a bunch of little lists because I'm not that organized, of ideas for episodes that just don't fit very well within the regular structure and that I'm probably not going to be able to make enough of to be regular specials like My Favorite Monster. So I'm just going to do a couple of those. I'm going to record a big bank of them probably this coming weekend. I'm going to go back and add in announcements as I get new Patreon subscribers or whatever. And then in June, we're going to kick off with the Fiend Folio. And the way the Fiend Folio is going to work is, like this one, I'm going to start with an introductory episode that gives an overview of the whole book. And then we're just going to go through it alphabetically. I'm thinking of recording an audio clip that just says, "This otherwise unremarkable monster is made cool by good Russ Nicholson art," that I can play when I don't really want to talk about a monster. I might, like, make it into a little song, like, "This otherwise unremarkable monster is made cool by Russ Nicholson art," or something like that. I gotta amuse myself somehow. And if I've made that joke before, I apologize, but I assure you, as we get into the Fiend Folio, it is much on my mind. If you have something you'd like to hear me talk about, let me know. I've had some requests, and some of those I'm trying to work out how to address. But yeah, if you think there'd be a fun thing for a one-off, yeah, leave me a comment on the Patreon side, or send me a tweet or an email, and I'll see what I can do. You know, the other thing that I was going to talk about in this episode is what I've learned about monsters from reading the Monster Manual. I feel like in this episode I talked a lot about what I learned about the Monster Manual, but I haven't really talked about what I learned about monsters. I mean, I knew monsters were great, but I feel like I have learned some things, and I don't really know that I've expressed it very well. So maybe there'll be future wrap-up episodes. I don't know. But I do sort of feel that something as kind of diverse and chaotic and weird as this book is very hard to summarize and very hard to kind of put a bow on in terms of explaining what it's about. I don't know that it's necessarily about anything, and that's kind of what's great about it. And, I mean, that's what I like, I am going to love the Fiend Folio. Before that, though, it's going to be some special episodes. I don't even know what they're going to be about, but I think you're going to enjoy them. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you so much for listening and for your continued support. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.